Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the VRO. It's May 25th, 2012, and it is 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Today we continue our week-long look into feature film six-month rule. On Monday we spoke to Blaine Weaver, who wrote, directed, and starred in the film as the main character of Tyler. On Tuesday we interviewed Martin Starr, who played Alan in the movie. And today we are happy to have another special guest with us. Today, we're just waiting for him to call in. Today our guest joins us to talk about his role of Julian in Six Month Rule. He has also been seen most recently on the USA Network series Suits. So we're really excited and happy to welcome Patrick J. Adams to our show. We're just waiting for him to call in. In the meantime, Amy, do we have anything going on for early next week, or are we on vacation until Wednesday? I think she might actually be screening his call, so I will just continue talking. If you guys haven't had a chance, I know you haven't had a chance to see the movie yet, but it will be opening in New York on June 1st. And then it goes to, I want to say Georgia or Baltimore or something. I don't know. I have to find out that information from you. Maybe Patrick can let us know when he comes on. I do know that it opens up on the 8th in New York. And if you have not thought about seeing it, you really should. It's a cute movie. I don't really want to call it a romantic comedy so much. It's almost like a romantic dramedy.
Jess?
Yes?
I'm going to cut you off because you have Patrick.
Hello?
Hi, Patrick. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
No problem. So I was actually just rambling on waiting for Amy to screen the call, but trying to describe to our listeners six-month rule. Which is the film that is opening on June 8th in New York. We were lucky, and Amy and I were lucky enough to be able to see a pre-screening of it. And it's hard for us not to give away spoilers, but without giving away any spoilers, in your best words, how would you describe the movie?
I think of like the anti-romantic comedy. I think it's like, Blaine is really good at kind of subversing the genre of romantic comedy. So it's, you know, you kind of have this, you know, you don't want to call him a misogynist, but he's got sort of misogynistic ideas about the way the world works, and you kind of get to watch them get taken apart. And, you know, it's a little darker fare than I think your regular romantic comedy. But at the end, it sort of strikes, you know, it almost strikes the heartstrings a little bit better because it comes at you from, I don't know. We all know that guy. I guess we all know the.
Yeah.
We all know a new person who's, you know, super jaded about the way that things work and has his routine and thinks he's got it all figured out. And to watch him actually get taken by surprise,
yeah,
and realize that, you know, some of these cliches actually are true, and that falling in love can be, you know, everything that other people says it is. It's kind of fun to watch in that way. So I would say the anti-romantic comedy is the easiest way.
The anti-rom-com, huh? And
I made it up on the spot, so don't hold me to it, but why not?
No, I think that's a great description of that. I was going to say it's almost like a romantic dramedy or dark comedy, because it doesn't
necessarily... There you
necessarily,
go, that's good, I like...
I like the fact that you called Blaine subversive. I think I would agree with that assessment. We spoke to him earlier on this week. He's a fun guy. But definitely,
yeah,
like,
he's hilarious. And he's great because he's so funny, but he's also got a darkness to him. He's got, you know, he's got a side to him that, you know, he doesn't try and hide, but he embraces and he kind of puts it into his work. And I think, you know, this movie more than any of his others really explores that side of him. So I think it's great. Not that he is like his character in the movie, but
he made it very clear that he knows people like that, but that's not necessarily. And at times he may have been like that sometimes. But that's not his normal outlook
his MO. But you know, he's got, there's a piece of it that is true, and I think that it's cool that he kind of made a movie from that perspective and didn't sort of try to pretend like there's not a part of that in all of us, you know, the jaded jaded romance.
It's funny because both him and Morton, because we had Morton on earlier on this week as well, we're talking about the fact that the movie has such character, the characters have such realism to them, the way that he wrote them and the way that they were portrayed by the actors. You really, if you didn't associate or relate to the main character, there was not somebody else in the cast or in the cast of characters that you couldn't relate to. There was something for everybody. And they were all real.
I'm glad you think that, because my work in the movie, if you think my work in the movie was relatable, that makes me happy. I don't think I know anybody quite like what I played in the movie. But as long as it's grounded in reality, then I guess I'm happy about that.
Yeah, no, actually, what was the best part about playing Julian? Julian was kind of like, he's cute and clueless, but he tries so hard, and you really want him to get the girl, you know, even though he always seems to miss the mark when he's talking about her stuff.
I'm happy you see it that way. You know, we didn't have a lot of time to, like, as is the sort of the way that independent films seem to go, you don't have a lot of time to, like, talk about these things and figure them all out. So, you know, it was kind of fly by the seat of the pants, but I knew that going in there that, you know, I think it was a surprise to all of us that I think the character could have been just douchey. It could have just been the guy that you were like, so that you were just solely rooting for Blaine, even though he was kind of this other guy who had all of his own problems. You could just root for him because this rock star guy was just so obnoxious that it was too much. But I was so happy when the reaction came in from the work that we did, that even though he's so obnoxious and even though he's so full of himself and even though he obviously just doesn't get it, he's not totally despicable, that you see that he really does care about this girl. And even though, you know, he's not a guy that any of us would probably really want to be going out with, that there was some sense that, like, that she and him had something, and that it made sense, and that it filled some desire for both of them. And that even though he's kind of clueless, there's still something real going on with him. And that was my hope with him, and I'm really happy that it worked out that way, because while we were doing it in some of the bigger scenes, I thought, man, people are just going to hate this guy. This is the guy that writes words on his fingernails. There's no way we're going to make people like him.
I guess fortunately or unfortunately, I do know several people much like the character of Julian, and they're very fun to be around for short periods of time. Like you said, I wouldn't want to date one of them, but they're definitely, they have their own kind of charisma to them. But I didn't see Julian as a douchey character at all. I kind of felt bad for him, because although he was obnoxious and full of himself, like you said, he wasn't mean-spirited, and he really tried. Like, you could see he was trying to impress her all the time, and he was always going out of his way to make it a real situation, to make it what he wanted
totally.
It to be. And
I think that speaks to something bigger in the, you know, in the film, which is that, you know, everybody deserves a chance at doing this love thing. You know, it's like there's all sorts of people on the planet, and, you know, there's a lot of them that maybe don't appeal to every one of us, and, you know, everybody's got their problems. But the fact is that, you know, everybody deserves their shot at it. And you know, I think that that's a really cool message, that, you know, whoever you are, you deserve to be loved and to love. I think that's a cool thing.
Yes. Was there a favorite part of filming your character? Was there something in the movie that you liked filming more than others?
Just in general, I love shooting with Blaine, because there's, you know, it's having that kind of trust with a creative person is just really rare, and knowing that they trust you so that I could just be insane with it, you know, like, this is such a character so far from who I am or anything I've had the chance to play. And so it was such a great opportunity for me to just be bold. So, you know, I, from wardrobe to everything, he really gave me full rein. I kind of went in and just grabbed pieces with our wardrobe designer. We went to every store that I would normally stay out of and just put this whole kind of insane wardrobe together. And then I'd be sitting in, you know, my room, kind of you know, thinking about other ways that are going over the script, and I'm like, oh, I could draw a word on my fingernails with, you know, with a Sharpie marker. And, like,
yeah.
just coming up with all of this absurd stuff that, you know, if I was shooting with somebody who I didn't know or didn't trust or was, like, really worried about impressing, I probably wouldn't be ballsy enough to, like, take those risks. And it was so cool to be able to show up to set with a word written on my fingernails and go, you know, and go,
okay.
Hey, I'm just going to do this, you know, not even tell him, be in the middle of the scene and just do it, you know, and know that it's like, even if it doesn't work, it's fine. And, you know, I'm not going to be like asked, what the hell are you doing? And that's the kind of, you know, that's the kind of actor I want to be. You hear about those are the best kind of actors, you know, famously Johnny Depp shows up on a set for Pirates of the Caribbean and this character and everybody almost shut the thing down. They had no idea what this guy was doing. And then he goes on to being one of, like, sort of the iconic characters of film in the last decade. So I think I want to be ballsy whenever I do something. And getting to work with someone like Blaine and on a character like this, it really encourages that part and gets me to practice. Not to mention I also got to, you know, have a couple of cello lessons, and getting to do music on stage was really fun because, you know, I have been, you know, playing guitar and all that's something that I do, but I've never done in real public or ever on a stage before. So it was great to kind of indulge that musical side of myself and get to go into the recording studio and record some of these songs. And it was, you know, that whole thing was just, it was such a cool opportunity that, you know, I haven't had before.
That's very cool. Would it be something that you would want to pursue further now that you've done it?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I learned how hard it was, you know, like you go in and you're like, okay, I got this, just relax and figure it out. They'll make your voice sound good. And then you listen to the first time you record something and you go, holy God, I'm terrible. So, you know, even being in the studio for like 4 hours, I felt like I was figuring it out a little bit better. And I would love to, you know, in the future, you know, to work more on that and see if I can get better. But I have a lot of shyness about that, about the singing and about performing musically. So again, if you're scared of something, it's probably a good indication that you should be doing more of it. So hopefully somewhere in the future I'll get to do more. Maybe 6 month rule part two.
Yes, to find out. But and it's funny, you were mentioning before the being able to play the role of Julian and the freedom that it had, especially with the being able to play the rock star. I have to say, one of the first things that I noticed about Julian before I noticed anything else was the fingernails. And I thought that was a very realistic touch. So it kind of
We also, thank you. I love that you noticed it. And the guy liner was the first thing I walked in on, too.
Liner,
I was like,
a little
bit of guy liner. It goes a long way.
Yes. I mean, I actually know at least two people that are almost like same style, the same type of things. I mean, writing words on their fingers and painting their fingernails with different kinds of highlighters, and it just
awesome.
It was so funny.
Yeah,
I was like, oh my god.
You know, and now in retrospect, because I'm spending so much time on this show, on suits, you know, and every day I come in and I put on my suit and my tie and my shirt and my belt and my nice shoes and all that stuff, which is, you know, it's fun in its own right, but, you know, it makes me yearn for, you know, more Julian parts, more like, you know, really getting to just, like, explore a side of fashion and culture and, you know, voice and all of it. It's something so different from myself. It was so much fun, and I love getting my hands dirty and all that stuff and throwing together these characters from just so many different pieces that are so far from, you know, who I am, but are such a pleasure to kind of wrap myself up in for a while.
Yeah, it's a nice juxtaposition to, like, what you wear on set for suits, like you said, and then getting to the rocker. Which, by the way, good job on the clothing, because it was awesome. And
cool. I'm glad you like it. I still have a couple of the pieces.
Nice.
I still have a couple of pieces hanging in my closet, and I never find the right place to wear them in my own life. I'm like, no, I don't know if Julian's ready to come out today.
No. But you have to start small, just with like an accessory, a bracelet, or, you know, start layering them, then put two bracelets together, and then try something
else. You got to start small, right? Just plant the seed. That's right.
Yeah. It's your own little piece of anarchy on your wrist.
Yeah, little pieces of anarchy every day.
Yeah. one at a time. It's funny too because you, and this is going to seem like it comes out of left field, but you are quite the photographer, and it's funny that you're welcome. I'm drooling over your photography on your webpage. It's funny though that Tyler, the character of Tyler, is a photographer in the movie, and
right.
you guys do this whole scene where he does this photo shoot of you. How was that? Did you actually help him out on some of that, or did he ask you for advice and what cameras they should use or anything like that?
It was actually funny when we got onto set. You know, I saw him getting his all of his camera gear together, and Blaine's not a photographer, and he's so busy doing everything because he's directing this movie and he's being in it, and so, you know, I saw him grabbing this camera in a certain way, or grabbing it in a certain way, or like not, you know, going to take a picture, and I was like, you don't look like you're touching that dial. You're not changing the f-stop. What are you doing? And then he was like, sure, you back off. I'm like, yeah, nobody's care about that stuff. But it was fun. It was fun to watch Blaine, you know, figure that out. Every photographer has their own independent style of how they shoot, and it was fun to watch Blaine. He was a little bit more rock and roll than me. He was that kind of like, let's walk down this alley and, you know, sit in that couch. And the more we shot, the more confident he became as a fake photographer. So it was fun. It was fun for him to, like, you know, figure out his fake photographer vibe. And he got more and more confident. But still, towards the end, I think if we had handed him the camera and said, you know, go ahead, take a great picture of us, he would not know where the on switch was. So that makes him an even better actor.
Nice. Yes, that's true. Now, in your own photography, and I have to say, guys, if you have not seen it, you can see his you can see Patrick's photography on your webpage, right? Is it Half Adams or Adams Half?
Yeah, halfadams.com, and all that's going to probably get rearranged in the coming months because it's an older website. But yeah, a lot of the stuff's on there. I'm also on Tumblr. I post a lot of stuff there, and now I'm doing Instagram a lot because that's easy and quick, and I kind of like the way that it looks. But photography's tricky now. Everybody's taking pictures, you know, so I'm kind of wrestling with with the way to kind of make it mine and individual and unique. And obviously I'm a pretty busy guy these days, so I don't get as much time to really sit down with my computer and go over all my shots. So I'm trying to sort of figure out what my next step is in the photography world. There's plenty of ways to follow it.
Actually, in high school and a little bit through college, I did a lot of photography with film, and it's just such a cathartic process, and going into the dark room and being able to create this picture and different effects with that. So I'm a big fan.
I think it's so nice, especially when you work in film too. It's just the thing just goes on and on. You get these long days, and you know. It's just you're moving so fast and doing so much, and for me photography is like meditation. It's like so nice to be able to go out for a day and, like, you know, look at something and take a minute with it and to, like, really indulge in, like, a moment and capture, like, you know, and to invest yourself in just, like, one moment in time and, you know, pay attention to all the details of an image and a frame. And it's so peaceful in comparison to, you know, shooting, which is just madness, and so many people, I'm constantly going, and lights and sound, and, you know, there's so much to think about. So for me, it's a really nice balance to the rest of my life.
Right. And now, do you usually use film, or do you do digital also?
Oh, I do digital a lot, just because, you know, I love film, and I spent quite a bit of time in dark rooms myself, but, you know, being of the generation we are, you know, sometimes like to get to the result faster. If I go on long trips, I spent a month in New Zealand this year, and I was shooting quite a bit of film there because I had the time to just sort of, there was no rush. I didn't need to see the picture right away, but I always have my digital on me just because you learn faster too. You know, I'm pretty much self-taught on the camera, and it's a lot easier to sort of get a good photo book and go out with a digital camera and see the results immediately so you know, you know, what all your settings are and know how it all works before you, you know, because with film, you wait a month before you get the photo back and you have no idea what
right.
you did or how you did it. So.
Yeah, and unless you have a dark room yourself, it's kind of up to the discretion of the person developing your film. You have no control over different sizes or different focuses and.
And with film now, it's like there's a kind of good like middle ground because I'll take the pictures, I'll shoot, and then I'll get the film processed, and then I'll just scan the negatives. So it's like I can still work with it and post the way that I like to on the computer, which is sort of just how I feel most comfortable. But I still get the experience of shooting with film.
Being
it goes from analog to digital. We're bridging the gap, doing everything.
That's true. Okay, enough of our geek talk. Everybody's going to get bored from my geek talk, but I enjoyed it. This movie is not the first movie that you've done with Blaine. You were also in Weather Girl. And what is it like working with Blaine? Obviously, it was a positive experience because you did it again with Six Month Rule, but how is that creative process with him? Is he pretty open to suggestions or high energy, anything like that?
He's totally open to suggestion, and you know, he's so good at what he does, and I think, you know, for me, I love working in environments that are encouraging of people to participate. I'm not good in an environment where, you know, it's just I'm the actor and you just stand where I tell you and that's it. It just never works for me. And right from day one of Weather Girl, it was like, you know, we were part of this. We were all in it together. It was a team. You know, he had great ideas. And so if I didn't have a great idea in a moment, I'd be like, great, you have an idea. And then if I went, what if this? And, you know, it's like anything. It's by committee. You know, if you say something and a bunch of people laugh, you know, then it's like, that's the better idea. Let's go with that. That works. And when you work on little films like that, you've got a really tight-knit small group of people that you know, immediately befriend, and you trust each other implicitly. And Blaine surrounds himself with some really great people, and just, you know, because of the nature of who he is. And so, you know, from day one of working on Weather Girl, it was like, you know, it was obvious to all of us that this was a good group of people to be in bed with for a while. And I would work with Blaine in an instant whenever he calls upon me.
Okay.
I wanna work with him. He's so encouraging of everybody, and you know, it takes a lot to get a movie made in this day and age. It is not a small thing. And generator turned on right next to me. Hold on. He's a terrific guy. Yeah, and he creates an environment of such trust and fun, and everybody's laughing, and you know, you get to the end of the day and you don't want to go home. You just want to keep, you know, working or just go out and have a drink. You know, that's a great way to work.
Yes, it is. I do have a couple more questions and then I'll let you go because I know you're really very busy. This movie deals with a lot of Tyler's dating roles. Do you have any dating roles you'd like to share?
Yeah, I haven't dated in a long time, so my dating roles are probably aged. I was probably the world's worst guy at dating, so none of my rules would make sense.
None of them apply. Okay.
Yeah, my rules were never. My rules always seemed to get me in trouble. They never were particularly productive. For example, I always ended up dating my friends. I was always like, hey, we've been friends, we get along, we should totally date. And then, you know, it goes wrong or goes south, or you know, realize that this is a bad idea, and then you've kind of soured a friendship. So I would encourage no one to ever listen to any of my dating tips.
Okay, noted. Okay. So actually we have two questions that we always ask all of our guests. They're very, very serious journalistic questions. I say that with a very deep tongue in cheek. In the impending apocalypse, who would you want by your side to watch your ass?
Oh, man. Well, if I don't say my girlfriend, we're in a whole lot of trouble. If it's all about survival, I have a friend whose name is Mark Wildman. Let's just begin. His name is Mark Wildman, and he trains right now. He's actually a two-week course, a survival course in the middle of Wyoming or something, I think. He's in the woods, and he had to go on the survival course with nothing but a knife, I think. That's all you're allowed to take. And you go spend 2 weeks in the wilderness. And this is basically what he does for a living. And it's funny that his name is Wild Man because it's so fitting. And I go to Burning Man whenever I can as well, the big festival out in Nevada. It's a big arts festival in the desert. And it's sort of a survival course on its own because you know, have to bring everything out there with you to survive. And he goes there. He's sort of like a little king of Burning Man. He's been there for years and goes and builds a lot of the art and all that. So I think I would have to say, I've always joked with him because he lives not far from me in Los Angeles, that the minute the apocalypse happens, I'm showing up at his door.
Okay.
And I fully expect him to look after me. And then he jokes, well, if you're coming, you better bring guns and women. they're the key to survival.
All right. Well, if anybody's going to watch your ass, that would definitely be the person.
Yep.
And then our second question is, if you were a superhero or if you could be a superhero, which one would you be and why?
Superhero. You know, I don't know which one specifically, but what I will say is that my favorite, what I would want is shape-shifting. Anyone who says that they want to, you know, fly or, you know, move things with their mind or read people's minds, no way. I think shape-shifting, and I guess it's appropriate for an actor, but I think the ability to become anyone at any moment has got to be pretty much the coolest thing that I could ever imagine. So I'm not sure who would that be. That would be like, what's her face from X-Men? What was her name?
Mystique.
I would be Mystique.
Yes.
For sure.
Nice. Congratulations,
you
are the first.
Of course I picked a woman.
No, but there are men too, but you are the first person to pick that ability, so congratulations.
Put it on the wall, that's perfect.
Yes, like Patrick J. Adams, shapeshifter. Yes. Thank you so much for joining us. We do have one more favor before you go. I don't know if Amy got to tell you when she was screening your call, but we normally will record on air sound clips of our guests basically introducing themselves and saying that basically say your name and you're listening to the VRO. And what we do at the end of our year is we put them all together in a compilation and play them for our listeners to show who we've had on for the year.
Totally. And it's VRL?
VRO.
VRO, that's what I thought. Okay.
Yes.
So should I do that right now? Here we go.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And it's just my name, and you're listening to VRO?
Yes.
Hi, this is Patrick J. Adams, and you are listening to VRO.
Thank you so much, Patrick. Best of luck. And I hope you'll
my
keep
pleasure.
Us updated. Yes. And we'd like to have you come back sometime also.
Anytime. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Amy, are you there?
I'm here. Great interview, Jess.
That was funny. Yeah, he is funny. I could have had him on for like another hour and a half talking trash and getting into other projects that he's been in because we didn't even jump into Suits.
No, we didn't.
We'll have to see if we get it back on to discuss Suits. In any case, it was a lovely, lovely interview. Really glad that I got a chance to do it, even though I am on my way to the cabin in the woods. Dun, dun, dun.
Let me tell you about Jess's little cabin in the woods.
No, wait.
I'm talking. I have the floor. You've had the floor for the past 28 minutes.
Fair enough.
So I'm like, okay, Jess, we have these interviews coming up. When do you want me to schedule them? And she was like, well, you can do it, you know, Memorial Day weekend, blah, 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 blah. And I said, are you sure? Because it's Memorial Day weekend, you know, people's going to be doing stuff, you and Eric normally go away for holidays. And she's like, oh no, Eric said we don't have anything planned, nothing at all planned. So I booked two interviews on Friday, and she's on the road.
You know, I was ready to strangle him, throttle him, because he says the other day, he's like, you know, I don't know why Amy scheduled us. And I'm like, are you, like, retarded? Because she was on the phone with us. On speakerphone, and she specifically asked you, and I asked you, do we have any plans for Memorial Day? And he said, what did he say, Amy?
He said no. He said no.
He said no. And then the very next freaking day, he goes, oh, I just talked to my dad, and we might be going up to the cabin. And I was like, I'm going to kill you. I just gave Amy a weekend date. You specifically told me that we weren't doing anything because we asked you, and you said no. I don't remember that. Yeah, you said no. And he's like, well, you don't have to go. I'm like, gee, thanks. I'm going to sit here by myself.
You could have just came down with me. We would have celebrated.
I couldn't believe it. I was going to kill him. I was like, are you serious? I told you no.
Yeah, so thanks, Eric. Now Jess has to climb a pole tonight to get reception for her last interview of the week.
Yes, tonight is, we're still continuing on our discussion of 6-month rule, and we are interviewing Natalie Morales tonight at 8 p.m. So we should be, that should be the last one for the weekend, and I will be back on Wednesday, but after this interview tonight, I will not be reachable by phone.
No, she won't.
Or internet. You're on
or
your
internet.
Own.
We'll have to send up smoke signals.
Right, exactly. All right, well, let me get back on the road. I hope you guys enjoyed the interview, and I will find a parking lot at 8 o'clock tonight and broadcast from there.
Actually, you will find a parking lot at 7 o'clock tonight.
Right.
To be ready by 8 o'clock.
Exactly.
I mean it. You better leave the cabin at 6:30.
Actually, I think they might have a landline, so I'll check and see if I can just pay them some money to call in a long-distance number.
Well, but, it's New York, so, I mean, you're calling a New York number.
That's true. I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Talk to you later.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Do you love movies, music, books, television? You do? Then come on over to the VRO on Blog Talk Radio. We have shows for all your obsessions. Vampires, we've got them. The latest blockbuster movies, they're right here. Bands and books, music and fiction, it's all at the VRO. What are you waiting for? Log on to the VRO today. www.thevro.com.